Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Graham Holm here, back with Dr. Andrew Wilson for the Wilson Weekly on the Money Mentor podcast. Dr. Andrew Wilson, for those of you who may be living under a rock, is the chief economist of My Housing Market. He's not a pessimist. He's not an optimist. He's a realist. And everything he says is backed by data. And you know what else? He's always bloody right. How are you, Doc?
I'm good, Graham. Thank you for that. Very nice. But it's data and experience. I suppose that's the key, isn't it? You know, put the points together and you build the data up from the base. And in the end, you might get a little bit of wisdom. And I think wisdom's important for particularly those that are making decisions in regard to property buying and selling. And as we continue to reiterate, we certainly have a robust and resilient housing market in this country. And again, we proved that last year, but we're up and running. What is this, the third week of the year, Graham? Can you believe it?
It is.
Have we all lost that holiday glow and we're back into it? And I guess we've got 2 weeks and then the auction market resumes. We're going to have some interesting data coming forward over the next couple of weeks. Firstly, next week, we will preempt that just a little bit. We're going to see where the top auction suburbs in Australia, well, in Australia's capital cities were last year. So there's an interesting data point. Mm. And we might be just a little bit cheeky, but cheeky maybe, maybe not, and see who are the top auction agents last year, the top real estate agents last year as well. So first with the news here, of course, and a lot of good information there to help you with your decision making. But look, Graham, the market, the economy has hit the ground running. We've got a lot of new information this week, which has come out, latest information. We're still looking at data that's relevant to last year, but it's good because it gives us those trends and we can discuss why trends are emerging one way or the other or remaining the same. So shall we get
Absolutely.
Into it?
Absolutely. I think so, Doc. And for those of you who have been paying attention or tuning in as a new listener, just be aware that we do broadcast this on YouTube as well on the Money Mentor YouTube channel. And that allows you to see the slides that Dr. Wilson and I are referencing with all of his data. So if you're listening to this in the car and you think, I really want to grab that data, it is on YouTube and Doc does provide QR codes in the slides for you to download the report. So if you love what you're hearing, please jump on the YouTube and grab the slides and the video footage as well. Over to you, Doc. Let's not delay any further.
Okay. So, of course, we know all this is under the auspices of Infinity and My Housing Market, which is focusing on the current state and future prospects of your housing market. And, of course, the current state is the key phrase there. We really try to identify what's happening here and now. Not too much backward-looking data. And we've got, you know, some very reliable data sets and certainly broad and deep data sets that show us exactly what's happening in the housing market. But the housing market's not just about the data, Graham, as you suggested, or as you mentioned earlier. It's also about those correlating factors, that is the factors that drive housing market activity. And we look at those every week. Yeah, economic factors, but they are important and not just because of the, I guess, the driving force there, but they also set the scene for the narrative in terms of the conversation that's going on in regard to property. And of course, you know, that conversation tends to be tinged a little bit on the negative side because we all want to. Yes, it does. But we work through all that. So we don't have a tinge in our conversations and our narratives. We're all about supporting our position and our insights with data. And it's not just one data set that we use, we use a number of data sets and correlating evidence points. I've used that word again, correlating, but it does mean that, you know, we're not just relying on one point of view or one aspect of the market. We're putting it all together in terms of what's happening in concert with a number of factors. So let's start off with what our this week's property headlines, Graham. You like that, Graham? This week's property headlines.
I do.
Yeah. So look out in the media for what's happening in the real world in property. And from Graham and myself, this is this week's property headlines. And you'll see that at the beginning of every one of our shows, so you'll be able to know what we're going to cover. So we had the latest inflation data out, Graham. Yes, you were going to say something?
I was going to say, Doc, could we rename this to this week's clickbait?
Well, it's a little bit of clickbait, but it's exactly what is happening. And if you're not clicking on this, well, you're going to miss out on what's really happening. So clickbait can be a term that's used to suggest that, you know, it's an exaggerated headline to sort of suck you in. And when you're there, it's like, oh, is that all it is? You know, but no, we've got the real data here and it's very interesting. So it's really just a headline, Graham. We did have the November inflation rate inflation numbers out. Yeah, the rates, from the ABS over the past week, and inflation is down again, Graham. So, you know, perhaps some good news there for the outlook for interest rates. And just as another preview for next week, we're going to discuss the outlook for interest rates in 2024. So watch out for that conversation between yourself and myself. But certainly inflation is a key factor from the point of view of the Reserve Bank, and that's why they have raised interest rates. That will determine where interest rates go. So inflation, good news, Graham. Inflation now has fallen again.
Now, Doc, if we can, we've got a lot of new listeners. We've had about 25,000 new followers in the last month or so. So just for the people that are new to this, inflation, can you just give us a 101? What is inflation? How does it affect the economy? It's all for the new followers. And why is it good if inflation is falling? It's people that have no clue.
Well, it's about where inflation is coming from, Graham. And the interesting thing is that we're a little bit in topsy-turvy land, because if we go back to prior to COVID, and of course nobody remembers that, I guess, because COVID was a big event. But prior to COVID, we had this problem in the economy, and that was our inflation was too low, which meant that we weren't spending, we weren't growing, our economic buzz was very ordinary. So what did Reserve Bank, central banks do to try to pick up the economy? Well, they cut interest rates, because if you cut interest rates, you get people spending again because you're putting more money in mortgagees' pockets, and that creates economic energy, more demand, and that pushes prices up, okay, because you're getting more demand than supply. It didn't work, right? We don't remember that, but we cut interest rates down as low as they'd ever been, and it wasn't just Australia. Was other advanced economies. The US was at zero, Eurozone was at zero, and they were still getting this very flat inflation rate, very flat economic growth. So it was like, oh, oops, looks like monetary policy, economic theory is letting us down. Now, we forgot all about that because along came COVID, and of course, all bets were off because everything changed over a period of nearly 3 years. Certainly, the depths of COVID over a two-year period were very concerning. And to stimulate demand, of course, we printed money. We created a lot of spending from governments to try to get people out, you know, lubricating, if I could use that word, the economy. Now, the problem with that was that we got from the reverse of having not enough demand, we then got too much demand. So what happened? We got all this demand through spending, packages, through stimulus packages, and we didn't have the supply to keep up with it because everything gets shut down over COVID, right? So we're spending, but we can't get our lounge suite, we can't get our TV, we can't get our car, even though we've got all this lovely money from the government, because COVID has shut everything down. So what happens? Prices start to rise. Too much demand, not enough supply. So the Reserve Bank, or our Reserve Banks, our central banks have all thought, well, hey, we don't want to go back to the early 70s or the early 80s with crazy out-of-control inflation. That is, prices rising strongly. And it can tend to be a bit like a snowball down the mountain, and it just gathers energy and prices continue to rise. So, of course, they went back to monetary policy and they decided, well, we've got to dampen down this demand. So we'll put up interest rates, and that takes money out of people's pockets, so they stop spending because they don't have as much money, and that's the cure. in terms of the textbook's response to higher inflation. So we know we've been in that environment in Australia, the US, Eurozone, everywhere, because this COVID-driven inflation has been, you know, global. So interest rates have now got to the highest rate that they've been in decades. So the question has been, has it worked? We've had 13 rises in Australia. Well, has it worked is a strange question because inflation has fallen, Graham. And we're going to look at that more closely in a minute when we look at the results of November. Mm. But it's fallen. But has it fallen because of higher interest rates? Well, this is the answer. That is why we're saying inflation falls again, but why has it fallen? So we're going to have a look at that. So hang on to your hats, everybody. Okay. I've sort of set that one up. Now, we also, which is part of the inflation story, we have the My Housing Market House Building Cost Index, which we run every month, and we've run that for November. And house building costs are down again, Graham. They're continuing to fall, which is really good news, of course, because that's part of what's pushing overall inflation down, a small part of what's pushing overall inflation down. But it's good news in a sense for builders because they don't have to worry about making a profit as much as they were when we saw building house building costs going through the roof. So house building costs have continued to fall. So let's have a look at where those costs are at the moment. We're also going to have a bit of an interesting look at top performing regions. So we know what's happened with our capital cities. We've discussed that. So let's have a look at the major regions in our state, our major state regions. They're the regions outside the capital cities. These are local government areas. So let's have a look at what were the top performing local government areas in 2023. Some very interesting results there, Graham. And we also had the latest home loan data out over the past week from the ABS again for November. Mm. And interestingly, home loans rising again. We shouldn't be surprised at that because we know our housing market's rebounded. So no surprise that lending is up and it's continued to rise. But what was interesting, Graham, was we've seen a big surge in first home buyers over November. So, you know, first home buyers back into the market, we'll discuss that. So shall we get started? Returning to the inflation story. So these are the latest inflation numbers. So inflation, as I mentioned, is lower again. So headline inflation, so that's the overall basket of goods that that are modelled as being the typical household spend, that was down from 4.9% to 4.3% over the month, Graham. And that follows a fall the previous month over October from 5.6 to 4.9. So we've gone from 5.6 to 4.3% over the month, which is good news, Graham. We're heading down. We're heading south. So maybe this works its way into the prognostications of the Reserve Bank in terms of interest rates. So we also measure, and this is the measure that the Reserve Bank favours, and that's underlying inflation. So underlying inflation excludes those sort of volatile elements which can rise and fall due to seasonal factors such as food and fuel, because those things can be a seasonal and a volatile impact. So what underlying inflation is, it takes that out, so it gets to what the core inflation rate is. So the core inflation rate actually also fell, was down at 4.8%. And that's the measure the Reserve Bank uses in terms of its interest rate decisions, Graham. Again, the significant contributors were housing, and that's been a big push in inflation. Of course, housing is an important factor in household spending. So it was again up 6.6%. Food was higher also, Graham, up by 5.3%. But the interesting thing was that petrol, and we all know this, what's happening here, was down sharply in terms of its contribution to the inflation rate. So it was only 2.3%, Graham. That was the contribution of petrol fuel to the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, which is the inflation rate. And that's down from 5.9% the previous month. So this is very interesting, Graham. What we're going to look at quickly is this relationship between the price of oil and the inflation rate. So we'll just mention also that underlying inflation, core inflation, is, even though it's fallen to 4.8%, is still too well ahead of the range, the target range. So the Reserve Bank is trying to get to 2 to 3%. That's its mandate. That's its target, that inflation should be at between 2 and 3%. So we're still tracking at around about double that, Graham, you know. So there's still some work to do to get back to that. But the trends in terms of the inflation rate are certainly positive for the Reserve Bank. And I would suggest that that latest data would make them feel pretty good about where the interest rate is at the moment. But let's have a little bit of a deeper look here at what's driving inflation. So you can see there on the slide, the obviously the falling away in the inflation rate over the past year. A 7.1% was the peak, or that's where it was in November 2022, and now it's down to 4.8%. That's a big fall, Graham. And, you know, it shows that inflation is certainly moving towards the target range. Now, US inflation is still well below Australia's inflation rate. US is 3.9, Australia is 4.9. And the US interest rate, strangely, is well ahead of our interest rate. US interest rates at 5.5%, Australia at 3.5%. So I guess what you're saying, what you, you know, sort of relate to the falling in the inflation rate, you know, in relation to rising interest rates, is that interest rates have pushed the inflation rate down. Correct, Graham? Would you suggest that that's the cause and effect? Well, I'm going to challenge that a little bit here, mate. So I'm not sure it's all about interest rates. In fact, I'm not sure any of it's about interest rates. How's that for a statement? Because let's have a look at a chart which compares the price of oil to inflation. So you can see it's a very similar relationship. Now, it's lagged, but if you push the price of oil forward a little bit, you can see it almost identically matches the inflation rate.
Inflation.
This is for Australia. So it looks like it's all about oil, that inflation has fallen as the oil price has fallen, which is down significantly from its peak. Now, so instead of pushing it all forward to match it up, let's do something a bit simpler. And that is, let's look at the decline in the oil price since it peaked. So since the oil price peaked, and this is average monthly oil prices, it's fallen by 32.5% to November. So the price of oil has fallen since its peak by 32.5%. Now, guess what, Graham? How has the inflation rate fallen since its peak, right? Guess what? The inflation rate has fallen by 33.3%, which is almost identical to the drop in the price of oil.
0.8%. It's tracked in line less than 1%.
Mate, so seriously. So what I'm saying here, clearly what's happening with oil is then, you know, relates to what's happened with the inflation rate, right? So did we ever need to raise interest rates? Has it all just been about the price of oil? Now, you've got to understand that when inflation started to happen, right, after COVID, you know, when all this spending happened, supply couldn't keep up, and then inflation started to rise. And the first reaction from central banks was, well, it's such a temporary thing. Don't worry about it. Be cool. It's just going to subside once we get supply catching up with demand, once all those roadblocks that were created by COVID lockdowns, once they are out of the way, we're going to get inflation under control again. But after a while, they started to get a little nervous, those central bankers thought, oops. And of course, the media beat this one up. Oh, we're going to head to the dark old days of galloping inflation. So we entered into another phase of monetary policy, raising rates to control inflation. Now, it's the complete reverse of what happened prior to COVID when we were cutting rates to increase inflation and it didn't work. Now, except for the price of oil, this hasn't worked either. It's been an exercise maybe in looking at the textbooks and not saying, well, let's wait for factors to adjust post-COVID, that is supply factors, because you can get a lounge suite now, Graham, right? You can get a car, still got to wait a little bit. But all those things that were tough to get, you know, it's all rebalanced now. Supply lines opened up. Unfortunately, we've let the dragon out of the, you know, the inflation dragon out of the bag again, if I could say that. And we're now starting to see people pushing up wages and bosses having to push up, prices to cover those extra wages. And that's moving beyond the goods sector, which was the most affected by COVID lockdowns and the supply constraints. And we're starting to see the impact of inflation there. So clearly oil and inflation are tracking each other. So let's keep our fingers crossed, Graham, that oil continues to fall. Because according to this chart, if oil starts rising again, then inflation will start rising again. And the reserve, you know, central banks, the Reserve Bank will be like, oh my God, we've got to raise interest rates again. Where it's got nothing to do with interest rates, right? Mm. It's got all to do with the price of oil. And at the moment, we're starting to see more concerns about what's happening in the Middle East in regard to its impact, perhaps, on the price of oil. We've seen Iran is out there sending missiles into Iraq. It's sending missiles into Syria. You know, it's getting a little dicey over there, Graham. And all that region, of course, is very volatile, and it could have an impact on oil supplies. Of course, you know, we've also got terrorist groups and various groups, you know, targeting shipping in the Red Sea. What I'm saying to you here is, hey, you know, we got to watch the price of oil and hope that continues to fall, because if it does, then we'll see inflation continue to fall on this relationship, that'll mean lower interest rates, hopefully. But at the end of the day, is it not rational to say we didn't need to raise them in the first place? We just needed to be a little bit more relaxed about the, you know, the problems between supply and demand that happened as a result of COVID. So let's keep our eye on that. But folks out there, keep your eye on the price of oil, because that's what's the impact. That's what's impacting inflation, not interest rates. So, you know,
there you go.
Think about that for a conversation. But I also mentioned what's a big factor in the inflation rate, our house building costs, Graham. They're lower again. The national quarterly building costs were overall higher over November compared to the previous month, a little bit higher than the rise over October, and they still remain significantly higher compared to the same period of last year. So you can see that, but the growth in house building costs is definitely flattened, right? And we'll have a look at that shortly. So let's have a look at the annual change, because we look at annual inflation rate. So we're looking at this firstly in relation to what the impact on the inflation rate. So the rate of annual growth of national quarterly house building costs was again lower. So the annual change, even though the monthly change increased, the change compared to the same period last year is consistently falling. So, but levels are still high and they're still placing pressure on home builder profitability. And of course, we know we're chronically undersupplied. We need all the new homes we can get. But it is certainly trending in the right way. So hopefully that will continue. So this is the annual. So this is this chart tracks the annual change, Graham, in the building the house building cost index. So it's showing from month to month what the change is. And you can see it's now down to 7.1%. So that's a lot less than the 17.9% that we had a year ago. And the peak of the cycle, which was 23.3%. So it's come down a lot, Graham, but have a look where it was prior to COVID. It was 1%. So we've got a long way to go before builders can feel really safe again in terms of their profitability and that therefore that won't impact supply, which we need a lot more supply. But we're heading in the right direction, right, Graham? But we've got to continue at this level and hope that this data doesn't get locked in terms of builders' projects going forward, you know, their estimates. So some better news there. Now, we mentioned about regional house prices. So I know this has got you pretty excited, Graeme.
It does. I'm on the edge of my seat now.
I noticed that, so I thought I'd put that one in. Yeah. You know, I can see.
Yeah.
Graeme's on the edge of his seat, so let's get this done, you know, before he breaks out in a cold sweat. But so let's have a look at the top 2023, the top performers for each of the states, and these are the major regions, the major local government areas for each of the states. We're not going to look at South Australia or Western Australia because they don't have major LGAs in a sense. But, look, that's an argument and we can pursue that later. But what we've done here, Graeme, is we've looked at the change in the median price, the quarterly median price to December compared to what it was a year ago, that is the 2023 December quarterly median price compared to the 2022 quarterly median price. So these are the top performers. Albury, number one, up by 14.8%. Tweed, of course, which is on the border of the Gold Coast, and these are houses, right? And maybe we'll have a look at units, the major unit markets at a later date. But Tweed was up 13.8%. Dubbo up 9.4%. And your old stomping ground, Wollongong, had a 9.2% increase over the year.
We've got two in there, Doc. We've got Wollongong and Shell Harbour. I mean, hello, look at the Gongo, the Illawarra.
That's right. And isn't it interesting because we've said over and over again how Wollongong is a quasi-suburb of Sydney to some degree, and a lot of that real bargain basement type of value that Wollongong had years ago is gone now because everybody discovered Wollongong, and it's a million dollar area. And this is the LGA, not the suburb. So, you know, which covers a larger area, but up by 9.2% Wollongong, which is very similar to what Sydney grew over the year as well. Yep. So tracking the Sydney market, but just a couple of interesting points. I think Dubbo and Albury, and so I think Wollongong increased because of its connection with Sydney. It's basically an outer suburb now. I hope I can say that without people getting offended. But I think the other point to Dubbo and Albury, and we've pointed this out before, is its value. And I think the value of Dubbo and Albury, you can see their medians are under 600,000. I think that's driving demand into those particular local government areas. Your people priced out of Sydney who can do remote work are looking for better value and heading to Albury and Dubbo perhaps. Now, the other one there is Tweed, which was a very strong result. I think that's the Gold Coast energy, grain.
Yeah.
That's being picked up by Tweed, you know, and that's all part of that greater Gold Coast region in a sense, which has been, again, very, very strong this year and just keeps on keeping on. So let's have a look at Victoria. Victoria, obviously, it followed Melbourne to some degree, and Melbourne was as flat as a tack last year. It increased by 3-4%. Over the year, but I think that Melbourne's a bit of a special because I think that there's still some upside there in 2024. But certainly, Melbourne, you know, underperforming economy, had a lot of work to do during COVID. It still has some upside and presents some value. But the top LGA in Victoria, major LGA, was the Macedon Rangers, Graeme, which of course is and I guess you could say it's a proximate region in Melbourne. It's just outside of Melbourne to the north, but very popular there, up by 8.4%. The other results were really neither here nor there and just reflected what was a flat Melbourne market and a flat market for Victoria generally over the year. The Macedon Rangers there was certainly the top performer, and that's a really gentrified sort of semi-rural region, as I said, and there's a lot of development heading into the Macedon Rangers. And you can remember a couple of years ago, The Block, it did a special on Sunbury out there, and there's a lot of new work going out in Sunbury. And I think people are looking for that green change close to Melbourne. I think that's what's driving the Macedon Rangers surge at the moment. But not much else really there, and I think that generally reflects what's happened in Melbourne. And Victoria, certainly the same sort of results. Queensland, Bundaberg, top result. For Queensland LGAs up by 18%. But look at the difference in Queensland compared to Victoria, Graeme. Everybody there pretty strong. You know, most of them, well, half of them nearly double-figure growth. Rockhampton, number two, 17.4%. and Townsville starting to pick up again after what's been almost 10 years of subdued growth in Townsville, starting to show a little bit of life. But if you look at Bundaberg, Rockhampton, Townsville, again, they're lower priced LGAs, these medians. So they're offering good value opportunities compared to that Brisbane median, which is starting to push up to $900,000. So,
and I'll tell you what's a good one. I'll tell you what's a good one in here, Doc. I've been doing a bit myself there. Toowoomba.
Yes,
not at that lower end of the spectrum, but a regional city, the new international airport, a COVID business that we never used, the government rented and we never used it. But you've got a little bit, it's not that low price point. It's in that mid price point, pushing 10% and in line with the Sunny Coast. I mean, but that regional hub, that's a really strong growth rate for Toowoomba.
And if you're, as I said, Craig, the Brisbane median is now just on the cusp of 900,000. And you think about Toowoomba's 583. And once again, I think it's the value propositions that's driving a higher demand into Toowoomba, because people are being priced out of, you know, Ipswich, they're being priced out of Logan, they're being priced out of Brisbane. You know, as you said, it's a market that's growing. But isn't it remarkable to see how strong overall that Queensland market has been? The regional areas are really picking up. And we know Brisbane grew by 14% last year, Graham. So it's all about that energy, as we speak about, that works its way out from the capital city markets. And, you know, Bundaberg 520, Townsville 440. Now, Townsville's picking up, but gee, it's coming from a low base, Graham.
Yeah.
You know,
Townsville's the floods really hurt it years ago.
But well, that's and look, a lot of what also hurt it was the NRAS scheme that was very big in Townsville, and that just really crueled the rental market.
Put a lot of product in the market, really.
Yeah, and it just was you know, and Townsville landlords were guys do a lot of work in Townsville. They were just hurting big time because of that NRAS scheme. Once again, you know, beware the unintended consequences, you know, of poorly thought out, you know, sort of anti-market policies. And, you know, and Townsville paid that price. And Townsville, it's interesting, Graham, that Townsville used to track Cairns. They were sort of like Ballarat and Bendigo in a way. They used to track Cairns and Townsville. And Townsville was sort of the place you went to work, and Cairns was sort of the place you went to play, right?
To play,
But Cairns has just you know, moved massively past Townsville over the last 5 to 10 years, which just shows you that there was something just happening in Townsville in terms of you know, that housing market. But good signs there. Let's hope it continues for Townsville, up by 11.3%. Another big result for the Gold Coast, up 10% again, Graham, over the year. Of course, we know that Southeast Queensland block really exploded during COVID because of the refugee exodus out of particularly Melbourne, looking for a safe haven that they perceive to be Gold Coast, Brisbane. And Gold Coast just continues to keep on keeping on, even though we still don't have that exodus that we had out of the southern states, not at the level, anywhere near the level that we did have 2 years ago. So, you know, real positive buzz there in the Gold Coast and heading towards $1 million median, Graham. On the Gold Coast. So I think some interesting things. Tassie had a quiet year, or Hobart had a quiet year in the capital city last year. Glenorchy was the best performer of the major LGAs in Tasmania, up by 1.3%. But the others were down, particularly Launceston, which was down by 7.9%. So probably a bit of upside there for Launceston. Lonnie usually tracks close to Hobart, but yeah, it's been an underperformer. And we know that Darwin was also a little bit weaker last year. And both Darwin and Palmerston were down as the major LGAs in that area. So maybe looking for a little bit of a revival in Darwin and Hobart. But Hobart always tends to go the other way, Graham. So, you know, it's rising when everybody else is falling and falling when everybody else is rising. But it has had some very strong growth periods over the last 5 years, Hobart. So maybe just some consolidation there. So I thought that was pretty interesting, the regional data. And for those that are looking for some regional insights, but again, it sort of reinforces that the regions follow the capital city, Graham, don't they? And I think that really that Queensland market is just continuing to activate and to be resonant, you know, despite the end of those very strong migration patterns of a couple of years ago. So we'll finish off by looking at home loans, Graham. How about that? I mentioned mm-hmm. that we had our latest home loan data out, and that was for November from the ABS. So as we said, home loans were up by 0.8% over the month. And we can see that revival in home lending pretty consistent with what we've seen in the housing market. So it's followed that. We shouldn't be surprised there. But when we look at the breakdown in terms of owner-occupiers, investors and first home buyers, a little bit flatter for investors and first home buyers over the month. And of course, this is November versus October. But we can see just a pickup there in first home buyer activity in relation to those other buyer groups. And when we look at that growth, big rise in first home buyers over the month, up by 12.4%. Now, this data can be volatile. The ABS has alerted us to the fact that it's had some issues with first home buyer data. It's trying to fix that up. So let's just maybe take that with a grain of salt, but it says it's fixed it up, but and we've had this 12.4% increase. So investors up by 1.4% over the month and owner-occupiers generally up by just 1.1%, which was sort of flat. But I think it's interesting that investors have continued to be part of the market. And when we look at the year-on-year comparisons, Graham, even though they're all still down compared to the year before, investors have done better than the other buyer groups. But when we look at first home buyers, I think that's interesting. And I think we're going to see more activity from first home buyers, Graham, because there are a couple of strong motivating factors for first home buyers. Prices are still rising. And of course, that scares the hell out of first home buyers because the last thing they want while they're trying to save their deposit is prices to be rising faster than they can save. And of course, they don't have a trade-in to bring into the marketplace, so they're not relying on their trade-in, their other property to sort of compensate for higher prices because they're getting a higher price for their trade-in. They just got to get their deposit together. And in a high inflation environment, you know, that's tough, and especially when prices are rising. But the other big problem, the really big problem for first home buyers, Graham, is the rental market. So if you're seeing rents rise by 20% a year, as we're seeing in most capital city markets, what does that do to your saving capacity? How do you save, you know, when you've got to keep paying higher and higher rent? So there's a lot of motivation, higher inflation, generally higher rents specifically, and higher house prices are certain to motivate first home buyers into the marketplace. And I think we're seeing signs of that with that surge. So let's wait and see if that continues trend.
If there's one thing we know from your data, Doc, homes never get any cheaper. So I think that first home buyers are starting to realize there's no such thing as timing the market. It's the time they need to spend in the market. So it's getting tougher. You know,
and what is different now, Graham, is that I think that the rental market, short of a significant economic downturn, which is, you know, certainly, you know, nowhere in sight if it is going to ever happen, we're going to continue to see higher rents. I think the rental market is a horror story, and it's going to stay that way for the foreseeable future. And the only thing that will stop higher rents will be the inability of people to be earning more to cover the extra rent. So, you know, as I think that's what's different now. You can't, as you said, time the market. In the sense that, you know, you can wait for less demand for rental properties and therefore be able to save, and the difference between renting and buying will be, you know, sort of more balanced. But at the moment, gee whiz, you know, like I said, we're seeing a real surge from first home buyers, and I think that's reflective of a number of factors, but particularly the terrible position in terms of the rental market where, you know, a tenant's prospective first home buyers have either got to stay longer with mum and dad, or they've got to rent with a group, or, you know, they've got to rent outside the capital city, try to do something to keep their deposits ticking over. But even though we're not going to get likely a double-figure result this year overall with house prices, we're still, I believe, going to be around about 5%, 4 to 5% overall. And some of those more stronger markets such as Perth and Brisbane and maybe Adelaide They're on track maybe to get another double-figure result this year because they're the more affordable markets. So don't discount those markets having a double-figure price growth this year. More likely to be closer to 5% than 10%, but it's still in the black, Graham, and that's what we're used to in terms of our housing market over the longer period. So, and we just look at the breakdown of those home loans. In Queensland, we've talked Queensland, was the top performer over November in terms of home lending. So a lot of positive energy, not just prices, not just rents, but also home lending in that Queensland market. So, of course, we finish off by giving our little ad for the app, the My Housing Market Infinity app. Here it is. If you click that link, you'll get taken to, or if you copy the QR code, you'll get taken to the Infinity site, which has control over the app. But you've got to do the right thing by Infinity to get the password. So they'll tell you exactly what the hurdles are to jump, and they're not really hurdles, but that's how you get access to the My Housing Market Pocket app, and I can call it a pocket app, which is in, as we speak, Graham, under development to even broaden the tremendous data that's on it. So it is about finding out what your house is currently worth. It's not a valuation tool. What it does is that it shows you the median asking price and the median asking rent for every suburb in Australia, right? Yes, every suburb. Now, the suburb obviously has to have some houses and homes for sale to have some data. So if it's not there, it's because it doesn't have any data. But it is all there. And that's a screenshot of what you get from the app, Graham. So you can select price or rent. You can filter it for the state and the region. So you can filter it for New South Wales, Sydney or New South Wales regional. Then you can filter it for all the suburbs in those areas. We've picked Blacktown here as an example. This is a screenshot. Then you can filter it for the type of property. So you can have a house, a unit or a townhouse. So you can filter it for that. You can also filter it for the number of beds, Graham. Isn't this exciting stuff? So you can have total beds or one, two, three, whatever. So then you can search, and this is the result of a search here. You can see in Blacktown, the current high price, median price is 1.5 million. The median is 1.2 million and the low is 850,000. And it tells you how many properties are currently for sale. So there's 12 properties for sale. And this is for established properties. So we're only looking at established properties. So if you want to know what's happening in your suburb, if you want to know what the, and this will give you exactly the same for rent. If you want to know what the current rent is, and this is updated on a real time basis, Graham. So you're seeing real data. So it's a great little app. Now we're going to add to it. We're going to look at yields, these types of propositions. We're going to look at top performers. So look out for that one. But at the moment, this is a great little freebie from My Housing Market and Infinity. And Graham's group will instruct you on how to get hold of this great little app, which you can put on your phone. And there you go. You're in charge of what's happening in the housing market on a real time basis. So I know you're excited every time I speak about this, Graham. I can tell. But
I love it. It's just the hundreds and thousands of people like, what's the password? What's the password?
No, come on. So let's have a look at what we're going to do next week. Another big week next week. Of course, Graham, we've got the latest unemployment data coming out at the end of this week. Mm-hmm. So we'll be able to see what happened over December, which is the first of the data that's released. That'll be the first of our December economic data. Let's see if we're going to continue to shine in terms of our very, very strong economy. We're going to discuss also, Graham, in light of that latest labour market data, the outlook for interest rates this year, 2024. So I'm sure you'll be interested in getting involved in that discussion. What's going to happen with rates? What's going to happen in the US for rates, everywhere else? And also, as I mentioned before, we'll have a look at the top auction suburbs in each capital city. So what were the suburbs that produced the best results? What were the most popular results for suburbs? We might leave the top auction agents till the week after, Graham, to get those agents just feeling a little bit more nervous. But what I'd like to also do is let's have a look at those capital city investment returns for 2023. Okay. So returns are the return that you get from the rent on your property and also the capital growth. So we'll look at the breakdown just on the capital cities for yields, and also capital growth, just to see where the performances are. So that's an interesting guideline for prospective and investors out there. And as we saw with that regional data, Graham, each state, each capital city tends to energize itself from the capital city performance. Mm. So, but going forward, as I said, on the app, we're going to have some data that will identify the yields on suburbs. Probably have a filter for 20 minimum suburbs there, so we keep it reasonably robust. But we'll also have a look at, which will be very interesting, and we might need two passwords for this one, Graham, which will look at the top yields, the top yielding suburbs in the country. So how's that for a good one? So I know you like that one. So look forward to that. Don't have any sleepless nights over it because it will come soon. and that's all for this week, Graham. What a big week it's been. And I think we've given a lot of really top information for our listeners out there that are growing by the tens of thousands. And why wouldn't they with the latest property
Absolutely.
News from Infinity and My Housing Market?
Absolutely, Doc. Well, pleasure. I'm actually very excited for next week to look into that data. So
I like
talking about interest rates. I like seeing those auction results, and the markets tend to trend and track with it. So I think next week is really going to set the scene for people about what happened last year, where are we potentially headed as the auction markets kick off again, and markets tend to track that. So big week next week, everybody, boys and girls. And if you haven't, maybe get up to date on the last couple for the year, the wrap-ups for the year with Doc and Glenn and I, the kickoff to the year. Next week's really going to set the scene. And then onwards and upwards, the market waits for nobody. So
that's right.
Looking forward to it, Doc.
And auctions start, Graham, in 2 weeks' time, which will have the first results. And the other thing is, in the week after next, we'll have the first house price data and unit price data and rental data, but particularly the price data. We will have that the week after next. And we, as usual, will be the first in the marketplace with that data. So look out for that. We are first with the home price data. And as you know, our data is tracks just about all the other data sets that are out there. So there's something else to look forward to. It just never ends, Graham. It's an avalanche of information.
And we've got a masterclass this weekend live in Sydney.
That's right. Yes, I'm looking forward to
that. We'll see you there.
I'm polishing up the jokes, so let's see what happens. But a lot of good information.
We'll see. There you go.
Thank you,
Graham. Look forward to it. Thanks, Doc. See you on the weekend.
See you later.
See ya.